Today, who breaks first, the economy or central banks? With Harry Dent. Today, I'm joined again by economist and author Harry Dent. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Martin. Good to be back.
Yeah, great to have you back on the channel. A lot to talk about today, and we're going to talk about whether central banks are going to kill the economy or whether the economy will ultimately kill central banks. It's the really big question.
It is. Well, I'm looking for the economy to break the Fed more, you know. I used to think at some point they would stop going to extremes, but it's not. They're going to keep doubling down, and they did it with COVID. They went exponential. Yeah. And it's just a matter of the economy keeps flopping anyway.
Yes.
That at some point, consumers and investors, especially investors, are going to lose. They're going to lose faith. Well, wait a minute. They just the biggest stimulus in history, and we're already flopping again. I think, you know, our home sales are down.
Yeah.
Because prices are too high.
Yeah.
Is that happening in Australia?
No, house prices have been very, very high, and turnover has jumped up dramatically. That's partly because, so in some places, prices are 20% higher than they were before COVID, right? That's because rates were cut dramatically, the lending standards have been loosened, there's a lot of migration happening as well. So people are moving from the major cities to the regional centres and to Queensland, where it's a lot less, COVID-ridden. And, there's a lot going on. But, you know, the prices are still dramatically high relative to income. Income's going nowhere. Debt's still rising. So it's like,
but see, the thing is, in the U.S., it's finally hurting sales, though. Since January, our home sales are down 23%.
Right.
But it is because the prices have finally gotten to about 400,000 U.S., which is, I don't know, probably like 550 Australia. Yeah. Yours are probably, 600 plus average, aren't you, Australia?
Well, the average in Sydney is well over $1 million now. It's just below $1 million in Melbourne. And the average across the country is about 800, I think, now. It's huge, you know, way, way higher than it should be. It's just dramatic. And there are still people saying, you know, we've missed out. We need to buy now.
I know. Yeah. People are pretty stupid about this. But I think in Australia, you got to remember, the difference in the U.S., we did get our ass kicked in 2008. You guys didn't in the real estate.
That's true.
We did. So people here are a little more wary when things get bubbly.
Yeah.
But the Australians, I can't talk an Australian out of buying housing. So
no, it's definitely part of the psyche.
Yeah. It's never gone wrong for them in so long they can't remember, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, you know, it's amazing. Now, which way around is it? Has the Fed broken the economy, or is the economy breaking the Fed? Because that's really, to me, the big question now.
Well, how would the Fed break it? I mean, all they've been has been super accommodative.
Yeah. Well, they'll just go on doing it, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, they've been accommodative all along. They stepped up bigger than ever after COVID. And then the government stepped in with fiscal stimulus on top of that. They haven't been doing strong fiscal stimulus in the United States in most countries. So, I mean, the economy has to break.
Yes.
The central banks. The central banks are only going to double down and triple down and whatever they got to do. They're in this so far, they can't quit. They're like a drug addict. You quit, you go into detox, and you shake and shiver and puke all over the place.
Right. So the question then becomes, how long does that take, right? How much longer? And the point is, of course, that, you know, everyone's keep saying, well, that they can't do more, can they? But they are doing more. And
they do more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they really did it in COVID. I mean, that's what I'll tell you. They really did do, instead of 2x, they did 10x in COVID.
Yeah.
They used that as, I thought COVID would be enough to break it so they wouldn't be able, you know, but they went up 10x instead of 2x.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, I just say that 2020, in my cycle work, and this has been since forever, 2022 is the break point. If it doesn't break by then, it ain't never going to break. We may just end up in Japan in a coma economy, but we never have a big crisis. Japan, after the early 90s, never had a big crisis or big breakdown or big debt restructuring. They've just been limping along ever since.
Right. But of course, Japan's central bank owns more of the economy than almost any other central bank, right?
Well, most of their stock market, not just their bond market. But, you know, Japan's worth talking about too, though. People don't realize Japan's echo boom just peaked. So part of their strength was not just all the Japanese stimulus. They had an echo boom like the U.S. echo boom to come in the future. And they just peaked in 2020. So Japan, if the world goes down again, Japan is just going to go even lower. I mean, you know, you'd think Japan couldn't go lower, but no, they have another big demographic slide ahead of them. So they're just toast. So that's just another thing. How long can you keep this going? You can't do it forever, but I call 2022 the break year. I think there's a good chance we're topping, in late July or September. But I've had late 2022 is my worst cycle kind of coming together back 20, 30 years. This is not something new. So they're just pushing this up higher and higher against this cycle thing. If we don't break it by then I don't really have much to say. You can't do this forever, but I can't say anything because I don't have any bad cycles after 2022, you know, I really don't.
So talk to me about megaphone trends, right? Because I know that's something that you've been looking at, and there are a number of those about at the moment, which could well be indicative.
Yeah, you know, Martin, I love the megaphone pattern for two reasons. Most people don't see it because it doesn't come that often. It is a pattern that tends to be at the end of long-term bull markets like this one. And what's happening in a megaphone pattern is the market keeps making slight new highs, but then it crashes and it makes new lows. So higher highs, lower lows, that's why you get the megaphone, okay? And it happens at long-term tops. So people aren't used to seeing that. They're not looking for that. They look at channels and triangles. You know, there's all these patterns that technical analysts look at and chartists look at. So the megaphone is something people don't expect. But I also, I like it because it usually is a terminal pattern. Or it's going to end with a big crash relative to what you've seen, because the last low is the lowest low.
Right.
And so there's a big megaphone pattern I look at, and the Dow is the best example, all the way back the 2000 peak, and then the 2007, and now 2021. That's a giant megaphone pattern, and you know, the bottom of that is like 4,000 or 5,000, you know, so from 35,000 down to 4,000. But the most pertinent one has come since early 2018. So we've had a series, you know, we had a peak there, we had another peak a few years later, and now this is the last peak. And the what tends to happen in the megaphone, it's kind of like an A, B, C, D, E. So A high, B low, C higher high, D lower low, E finale, and then you get the lowest low and the biggest crash at the end. Okay, so that E wave typically has what they call an overthrow. So it'll go above that trend line, higher highs, higher than before, to say, oh, this is over. Don't worry. You know, this isn't really a megaphone. We've broken out. And then it crashes. Well, that's what we've done here. So here we are coming into 2021 with a high that's gone above. And I use the S&P. All of them are doing this. The S&P is the best pattern. So that's why I use it in my newsletter. So we're in this throw over or overthrow pattern. Once it breaks back down into that megaphone through that top line, then you know, okay, it's likely breaking. And next thing you know, you get the lowest low yet. If you go back in the lows through 2018, 19, 20, the target for that, Martin, is 2,100 on the S&P 500 from 4,500-ish recently, okay? That is over a 50% drop. Now, so number one, that is a 50% drop, and that should happen in just a couple of months. And that's not the crash. That's the beginning of the crash. And that goes with another part of my research that I did years ago, you know, looking now when I realized, boy, there's bubbles everywhere, and I got to really become an expert in bubbles, not just demographics and cycles and technology and stuff. And so this, when you see a major bubble burst, like 1929 into 32, or even in 2000 and 2002 in the first tech crack, and around the world, I've looked at seven or eight bubbles in the last century. The first crash of major bubbles, like the first crash, it usually takes 2 to 3 years to play out. The first crash is typically 46% in 2.3 months. Well, 29 was 49% in 2.4 months, I think it was. And this would say, if this megaphone pattern plays out, it would project almost exactly that, about a little bigger now, about a 50% crash in a couple of months. And that would just be the first wave down of something that would take until at least late 2022 and probably into 2023 to bottom. So this would be important to me, so because something has to break this enough. I mean, people like me and you have been warning for years, yeah, there's a bubble, it's artificial. It is artificial. There is nothing fundamental about this boom since 2008. The fundamentals came in most countries, particularly Europe and the U.S., less so in Australia because you have better longer-term demographics. But we're done. The major countries in the world, and China's already done, and Japan's long done. The baby boom peaked in one country after the next. And so the demographic had been unfavorable. And if you look at it all, especially with the U.S. as the largest country and most central, 2007 was really the peak. So after that, this is why when people ask, well, how come it takes so much stimulus and then more and more, and they always think we're over this. No, it's because the demographic trends are down and they continue down. They bottom in the U.S. Between now, 2020 and 22 for the stock market and 21 and 23 for the economy on a lag. So we're in the worst bit now, but yet we've got this paradox of stocks are higher than ever. Well, that's because when they print money and throw it in the economy, they do it by buying financial assets. They are now giving money to businesses and consumers to stimulate, and they're doing fiscal stimulus and things like that, and spending on private. They're doing, but most of this has been monetary stimulus. They simply print money, and they do that by buying financial assets. They buy bonds or stocks in the case of Japan, which is done the most stimulus the longest. They've run out of bonds to buy, so they buy their own stock market as well. They buy financial assets, and that injects new money into the economy through those financial assets. So you don't get consumer inflation, you get financial asset inflation. So everybody's been looking, well, all this stimulus and money printing is going to cause inflation. No, not really. Because consumers are aging and spending less, even though they're spending more than they would without all the stimulus. But it's really the financial assets that are getting the biggest thing. And then that makes the wealthiest people feel better. And they're the ones doing most of the spending. I've been saying for a long time, when the U.S. economy is doing good and it's growing 4%, guess what it really is? I mean, you know, no one's been growing 2% in this weak recovery for the last several years. It's 4 to 5% from the upper 20% that own all these financial assets. And it's zero for the everyday family. So that's another exposure. By keeping this financial asset bubble as a way to stimulate the economy, they're favoring the affluent over the everyday household. And that's already, we already have the highest income inequality since 1929. So they're making that worse. So this whole thing's a mess and it has to blow. But to me, the reason this megaphone pattern right now is such a key chart, if that plays out, and again, remember, the first sign would be we've thrown over that top line. We're in that last, I call it E wave, before you get the biggest crash, let's say from 45, 4,600 in the S&P 500 in the U.S., down to 2,100, 50% or a little more. If it breaks back in that pattern after breaking over, that's a sign it's starting to crack, and then it'll go very fast. And so that's what we have to be on the lookout for. In my newsletter, I just keep telling people, look, we're beyond the point. All of my cycles together, and they're very good. I've worked on this market for 30, 40 years now. And, you know, I started out with the demographics. That was a breakthrough. But I realized, no, but technology cycles and geopolitical cycles, and there's always been a decennial cycle. There's just something like every decade we have a washout in the first couple years of every decade. And that's a really consistent cycle also. You put them all together, we should have peaked late 2019, early 2020, right about when COVID hit. But what they did when COVID hit so hard, the governments and central banks, and with the help of government, that just came back not 2x, 10x, like I was saying before. So this is the showdown now. Governments, COVID forced governments to step up way more. And if this much stimulus coming into 2021 and 22 does not sees economic weakness again, and every stimulus has seen this, they stimulate and then the economy slows on about a year lag. And then it's like, well, wait a minute, we're supposed to be over this. If this happens again, I think people are going to lose faith. And so this mega pump pattern setting up is a great way to see that in action. If this thing follows through, the stock market within a couple of months from whatever the peak is, and I think probably could be literally August, September, October, classic crash months anyway, that happens. And it's 50% after all of this and a new low after governments went 10x instead of just doubling down. I think that's when investors, especially the smart money, lose faith. Okay, this really isn't working. There's really something, what we've been saying for a long time, Martin. If an economy needs this much stimulus to grow at 1-2%, it's dead.
Yeah.
It's fine. And now have the funeral and get it over with. And let it reincarnate or whatever. I mean, this is ridiculous. I don't understand how anybody cannot see. I mean, if somebody needed, you know, okay, a couple a day, now they need three, now they need five, now they need nine. Wait a minute, there's a problem here. You know, that's a drug addiction. Any drug addiction progresses exactly like this. We are on a financial drug addiction. Ever since the 2008, which was not only another bigger, deeper recession, in most countries, it was the end collectively for the developed countries in the baby boom. It was the end of the baby boom spending cycle collectively. Some countries had already peaked. Australia is yet to peak, okay? But for the whole developed world, that was the end. And that's why it takes more and more stimulus just to keep us crawling along. In the US, it's been averaged 1.6% growth. If you are taking that much stimulus to grow 1.6% and you don't see a problem, then you're blind. You're drunk on the Kool-Aid. You're high. You have the same addiction that any drug addict has, okay? And I've been telling people this, they don't get it. But also, if we fail after this round, this is where the government, I think, gets trapped, okay, by their own policy. They have been accommodative. I kept thinking at some point they would say, well, we can't go that far. No. They have always doubled down and more than doubled down this time. Now they've set themselves up. If the economy goes weak again, we're already seeing some signs. Like I said, home sales are down 23% in the U.S. Why? They're 400,000 U.S. dollars. That's like 550, 600,000 in Australia. And you guys are at that. I'm talking median prices, not average. Median prices are much lower. That's the everyday person. Average prices are heavily skewed. So this is when there's a point where people say, well, wait a minute, I've refinanced my mortgage two or three times now. I've traded up to a bigger house and then a bigger house and then I bought a vacation. What am I going to do now? What's the, you know, there's a point, especially when prices get high and people have you know, responded to stimulus alone where they just run out. And, you know, and of course, we have more and more baby boomers around the world retiring, and then COVID. Well, we had in the U.S. another sign, home sales dropped since January, despite rising prices and a strong market otherwise. Well, we had people drop out because of COVID. 2 million out of the 4 million that dropped out never came back. They just said, well, I'm an older baby boomer. I'm 58, 59. Shoot, I'll just retire now instead of 63. 63 is the average age in the U.S. 65 is the official age, but the average person retires at 63. A lot of those people just said, I'm just going to go ahead and retire. Well, how many people can do that before the economy slows down? So there are limits to stimulus, and I'm just waiting for signs that we're seeing it. And the first sign in the U.S. is the drop in home sales, despite a market that everybody's thinking you just got to buy, just like Australia. You just got to buy. You're missing out. It's this missing out thing that goes on and on. And they don't care. You or I or anybody with any intelligence says this is a bubble. They don't care. They're missing out and their neighbor's making more money than them, and they feel like an idiot. That's the way people act. So it's going to take the economy breaking the central banks. central banks are not going to break. I really thought COVID would raise the bar higher than they would go up to, and they went over. I mean, that's when you drink, you know, the extra quart of vodka in one night and just pass out on the floor. I'm just waiting to see when the economy breaks the central bank.
And Harry, the question, of course, with all of this, and, you know, I think your analysis is spot on, and, you know, that there are so many warning signs, so much stimulus, so little response in terms of economic growth. But from an investment perspective, this is a really, really uncertain time for many investors, you know, because there's almost no safe haven anywhere.
Yeah, there's not. And, you know, the ones that are being preached, they say, oh, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, oh, gold. None of those are safe haven. Okay. First definition of a safe haven, something that goes up when bubbles crash and something that doesn't bubble up like crazy. Gold bubbled up just as much as stocks. Now, it peaks at different times and has a little different cycles. Gold has bubbled up as much as anything, any commodity, stocks, anything. Crypto, Bitcoin is the bubble of bubbles. The dot-com stocks were the bubble of bubbles in the first tech bubble. Now, crypto comes along. It's not in the NASDAQ, you know, like the dot-com stocks were. The dot-coms were 80% of that last NASDAQ bubble. They were younger. They were coming strong. These cryptos are their own thing, and they're just exploding. And Bitcoin, I think, could yet this year, the natural cycle would be one more run-up to about 100, 115,000, and then drop, listen to this, 6 to 7. That'll be the biggest crash we see, more than stocks. Stocks will crash more than corporate bonds, you know, and on and on and on and on. And the only safe haven I found, Martin North, in this scenario, in a deflationary bubble of all bubbles, all burst, everything burst, the only safe haven is the highest quality bonds. The AAA corporate, only the AAA, and the highest quality government bonds. And unfortunately for Australia, your bonds in some are higher quality than the U.S. in some ways because you have less debt, government debt. But the U.S. dollar and the U.S. treasuries will be the best safe haven at the worst of times. So I would tend to be buying the U.S. treasury bonds first. And as an Australian investor, when the dollar also booms, it is a safe haven, as it did in 2008, you get a double whammy there. But once the treasury bonds run, then I would go into the Australian government bonds and AAA, because you really have the highest quality bonds, especially on the government side. You have better demographics. This downturn is going to be much more of a financial bubble burst and not a demographic downturn like the rest of the world. So you don't have that big demographic downturn. New Zealand a little bit, Australia not. You're the only one of the few developed countries that does it. So that's the only safe haven. It's the highest quality bond. Gold will not go down as much as the worst commodities or a stock, but gold's going to go down at least 50%. So gold's not going to save you. Crypto is acting like gold here. It's kind of going up in the late stage. I think the last, boy, if Bitcoin goes one more surge to 100, 115, boy, if you don't sell then, you're an idiot. I will tell you right now and stand by that. If crypto makes another run later this year on its four-year cycle, which has been ironclad, and you don't get out then you are an idiot. Doesn't mean it's not going up. I'm a bull on Bitcoin and crypto 15 years from now. It's the next big thing, but it's a baby right now, just like the dot-com style. You know how many dot-coms failed? You know how many dot-coms? The dot-coms went down 94-95%. In the 2000-2002 crash. NASDAQ went down 78, dot-coms 94-95. That's what's going to happen to Bitcoin and crypto. But if it does rally one more time, then my big question is, is it rallying because stocks are now starting to crack and it becomes the last wrongly perceived safe haven before people realize it's a treasury bond? Or does stocks go up one more time and Bitcoin just go up a lot more? That's my big question. I'm not clear on that. I would love that my perfect scenario would be stocks start to crash and people first run into Bitcoin and then Bitcoin crashes bigger than anything. And then the smart people are in the treasury bonds, like high quality government and AAA bonds. But I can tell you, there is only one safe haven because this is a bubble in everything. The 1929 bubble, real estate wasn't that big a bubble back then because people couldn't borrow money for cheap with no money down with a 30-year mortgage, okay? I mean, there were 5-year mortgages, you know, balloon mortgages and much more money down, 50% down, okay? So real estate was not bubbling as much as now. Commodities had peaked long before. So it was major a stock bubble. This is an everything bubble, and it is more global than ever. So this is going to be a big burst. But I'll tell you, Martin, where I'm going to disagree with most of the bears. When this crash happens, I'm going to say, this is it. It's over. We should have had the bigger crash in 2008 to maybe 2010, like 29 to 32. And then this is a secondary crash. I have to know. We didn't have that big crash. They stopped that. The economy didn't get to work out all the debt and restructure all these excesses and zombie companies. By the way, 20% rising zombie companies, public companies in the U.S., okay? Companies that are not paying their debt service, but they don't have to fail because nobody's pushing it, you know? The central banks aren't pushing the banks to clear loans, and the banks just let the loans stay there because they don't want to declare losses. So it's just stupidity. So this will be it. And we will end, we will move by 2023 or so into the next global boom. And then all the bulls will be saying, oh, we're going to be in a decade long depression like the 1930s. Because it's going to look just like 30 to 32, okay? Because that's what I've been saying. So if it does look like that, then they're going to say, oh, well, we're in for a decade lost economy. No, I'm going to say it's going to be hard. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be over. And a lot of debt's going to go down. And the only way that can happen, and this is my deepest prayer. This is what makes me religious, Martin. I want to see these fucking central banks fail so bad that they don't have a function anymore except to print money in a real emergency short term, that they get stripped. Because they're the ones that have fed this bubble after 2008 when they just should have let the economy restructure like we did in the 30s and then go on and boom again. So that's my perfect scenario. If we do start crashing this year, it really mushrooms faster than even the 29-32 crash because it's been held back and pumped up so long, stretched so far that it crashes even faster. And by late 2022 or sometime in 23, we're over this thing. And then we come out of it and we have another boom from 2023 or 4 to 2036, 37. That's a period other countries, especially in your neck of the word, Asia and stuff outside of China, will be booming much longer than that. But all countries will be booming into that time period. So we'll have another global stock run then. But we need a washout first. And so I'm hoping it starts sooner than later. And late this month is a good target in July. The one thing I'm going to ask, though, important to look for, because that's why we're in this unpredictable stage, because governments keep doubling and tripling and quadrupling down. We have to see a crash that gets nasty quick. That's the only way you know. Anytime we start to have a correction, let's say we go up to 45, 4600 on the S&P 500. That's my target in this channel it's in. Okay, that could be a top. But if we do not see within weeks a sharp, nasty crash start that looks like it's going to go down 50% in 2 to 3 months, then it's not a top yet. So every time we have a potential top, I'm going to be looking and usually can tell people within maybe 2 or 3 weeks, does it look like the top or not? But man, when this thing goes, I do think it's going to be 50% or more in about 2 months. So nobody's going to catch that. You wait to see if I'm right, and we're right, you're going to lose your ass. And then you're going to panic when it's down 50%, thinking it's going to go down 9%.
Of course, the point there is that the central banks will throw ever more fuel on the fire, trying to stop it from falling, right? Because, of course, they're worried about financial stability and they're worried about, you know, the broader economic parameters. But the point is that central banks have proven over the last 10, 15, 20 years that they are incapable of actually doing what they think they can do.
Exactly. Well, also, they do lose credibility at some point. Now, here's the trap. And here's the most important number in the world I'm going to stress in this webinar coming up, okay? The new number in the world that's most important is not GDP, but $85 trillion. Yeah, that's been going up. 500, and this number is already dated, but this is my latest figure about 7, 8 months ago. $525 trillion in financial assets, six times, a little more than six times global GDP. That should be two times, three at most. That's the bubble. The real bubble, as I said at the beginning, the Fed's great. Oh, yeah, the economy responds a little bit. It's the financial assets that are inflating like crazy. That's where all this printed money's going. And it's trickling into the economy, but the financial assets not trickling. Major bubble. The problem the Fed has, if these bubbles have blown up so high, if I'm right, and global stock markets take a 50% hit, and of course, real estate follows that. Okay, think about 50 assets, okay, trillion. At least 200 of that disappears in a short period of time. That's an avalanche they're printing against at this point, okay? That's the problem. The more they blow up this bubble, and you finally get that first 50% crash, which is exactly what happens when a major bubble peaks, at one point it gets to the point where they can't print enough fast enough. Of course they're going to react. Of course they're going to print, but they have to wait to see some evidence of it. I'm talking about 50% in 2.3 months. That's my prediction when this thing blows. It's going to be that fast. I think that's what breaks the central banks. The economy, the markets, which they created the monster turns around and eats the central banks that created it. Yeah. Because they can't react fast enough, big enough to offset a $200 to $250 trillion evaporation of money. So forget bank accounts, forget your savings account, forget your income, $525 trillion going up in flames and losing at least 40 to 50% of its value in a short period of time. That's what kills the central banks and causes them to lose credibility. And people say, oh, they finally go, oh, we kind of knew this was a bubble. What idiots we were. People are going to feel like the dumbest asses in history. And you deserve to. If you believe that economy can keep going up forever because they print money out of thin air. If you believe that, you deserve to lose your ass. That's my message to people. I'm sick of being nice. This is baloney, and if anybody doesn't see it, you're blind. People hate me for pointing this out, okay? This is the only reality there is. Bubbles throughout history only burst and burst badly, and this one, there's this guy in Newsletter, and he just says, quote, this is the greatest bubble in all of history by a magnitude of two. This is double relative to the economy, anything we've ever seen. That's exactly what I think. This bubble trumps all, and people say, oh, the government can let it down gently. No bubble in history has gone down gently, and there's no bubbles in history to compare to this one globally, not even close. There is no happy ending for this, and there's a point where governments can't keep blowing up the balloon until the plastic goes. And then you can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again after that.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned the webinar, which is coming up in a few days' time. And that's going to be quite important, right? Because you'll be talking, Robert Cassiaro will be talking, and I'll be there as well, trying to help people navigate this big, complex situation that we're in.
Yeah. This couldn't be more timely because things are showing, again, I look for that sign, U.S. homes, everybody wants to buy a home now. Everybody's already done it through it. You know, home sales are going up. Prices have finally got to the point that the inflation of financial assets is becoming its own worst enemy. That's what has to happen. It's not going to happen because central banks say, well, we've overdone it. We're going to pull back and taper. Hey, the Fed in the U.S. already tried that. You know, back in 2018, and immediately things went down and they had to stimulate harder than ever. There's no way they can pull back without the economy immediately going into a detox, as they call it in the addiction process. So the economy is going to have to break the central banks. And I think that's happening by early 2022 at the latest and starting very soon at the earliest. And I'd rather be out earlier than later. If it doesn't happen by the end of 2022, then I think we just go into zombie land. It's what Japan's really been in. And you've got to remember this. They were the first developed country to peak demographically, and their bubble in real estate and stocks was more like this. They were the only country in the world that had bubbles like that, okay? they were the precursor because their baby boom came a lot earlier than it did for US, Europe, and Australia. Okay? So they showed what happened, you know, can happen. That thing burst and it burst hard. So now it happens for everybody. And so there's only one thing you need to get out of the way, get in safe assets. Hey, if you got to give up the last 5 or 10% in the markets, I say give it up. Because when I said, when it happens, it's going to be like lightning strike. It's going to happen very fast. And they may even get a point where people can't even sell. There's too many sellers and you can't even sell and get a bid. That could happen in this case. So better to be a little early. I think that was Rothschild. Always got out a little bit early.
Yeah. It's very hard to pick the top, and sometimes being a little bit ahead of the curve is actually quite a good position to be in when you look back in hindsight. Harry, always good to talk with you. We'll put some links and things below to the seminar. And you know, as you say, the level of uncertainty is probably higher than it's ever been. The inability of central banks to control it are probably higher than it's ever been. And so therefore, it's really, really important to not just, you know, go with the mainstream view, everything will be fine and the central banks will save us. This is a time to make objective, independent decisions and be prepared.
It is indeed. And then, this webinar is probably may end up being the best one we've timed yet.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Harry. I will talk again soon. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Martin.